Live from Attilio's.
This improbable run continues.
This is the Alan Griffin Show.
We welcome you live to Attilio's on James. Stephen Fonte, Mike Waters with you. Still waiting on Coach Griff to arrive. We've got a lot to get to over the course of the next hour. Following just a stunning win by the Orange last night on the road down in Cameron Indoor Stadium, 95-91 in overtime. You were down there, Mike. I was at home watching it on TV, in the office watching it on TV. I can't recall a game that, you know, you go from Saturday losing by 14 points at home to Georgia Tech, a Georgia Tech team that a lot of people felt like they should have beaten handily, and they turn right around 48 hours later and they knock off the number one team in the country on the road. Can you recall in recent memory a situation like that where they flipped the script like that in a 48-hour period?
I'm sure there's probably been a situation where they did that, you know, coming like, you know, a day or 2 days off of a really bad loss. But what I can't remember is or what I do know is I don't ever remember going into a game and feeling like a Syracuse team had less of a chance to win.
Yeah.
Totally honest. And Griff just joined us. I'll say this right here in front of him. After that Georgia Tech game, again, this is from the outside looking in. You never know what the players are thinking. You never know what the coaches are thinking. You never know about matchups and stuff and what they're going to be looking at. You don't know what happens in practice the next day. You know, they get to do something about it. We as the media don't. Fans don't. They don't get to do it. But coming off that Georgia Tech game and then looking at Duke, no.
All right.
That was amazing.
Griff.
Hello, Griff.
You just sat down. Congratulations on that win last night. I imagine it's been a whirlwind 24 hours for you and the team. How'd you do it? I mean, Mike was just talking about, you know, you don't know what's going on at practice. You don't know what's going on in the heads of the players and so on and so forth. How do you turn around after that loss on Saturday and knock off the best team in the country on the road?
You know what? During the game Saturday, we got a little tight. Georgia Tech played a really good zone. That's what they do. And, we didn't see a lot of shots fall early. And basically, we kind of got tight. We got a little timid. And we took some tough shots. Because we felt like in order for us to win that game, that's what we had to do. Instead of, in the second half, we really attacked them and we got some stuff going to the basket. But, they got so much momentum by that time, the game was pretty much, a wrap. So, going into Duke, guys were loose. At the end of the day, Coach was great with the guys. He gave those guys a lot of confidence. I thought we had a great, practice going into Duke. The game plan was great. Coach was unbelievable in terms of, what he wanted and made sure that the guys knew exactly what we needed to do offensively and defensively to win the game. So, and that's how, we executed the game plan, and that's why we won.
The 17-point spread, that came up last night a couple of times, once in Jim Bam's postgame press conference. The players brought it up as well, that it's something you guys normally don't pay any attention to at all. But apparently Coach Boeheim addressed it with the players, and the players knew about it as well, and they were well aware. Listen, nobody's given us a chance. I've been working at Channel 9 20 years. You've never been a 17-point underdog as far as I'm aware. And, Mike's been doing this a long time as well. You guys seem to take that part of it personally, yes?
Oh, definitely. And Coach was fired up, for our pregame meal. Coach, the one thing he said was, all the years I've been coaching here for 41 years. 42 years. I don't even know the year. The
this is 43rd.
43rd. Okay, yeah. 43. Okay.
It's easy to lose count.
Yeah. That's the one thing he said. He said, listen, I've never had a team that was 17-point underdog to anybody, and we've played some really good teams with some really good players. And the guys got fired up after that. And at the end of the day, throughout the season, you're going to have games like Georgia Tech. Regardless of what, sometimes you could come out and you can win those games. And unfortunately, we came out and we lost that game. But at the end of the day, you're going to have those type of games where you don't shoot the ball well. And that's the one thing that Coach reminds us of. Sometimes when you don't shoot the ball well, when you're a good team, you can do other things to help your team win. And that's what we kind of lost track of at that particular moment. We just thought that if we don't make threes because they're playing the zone, we're going to lose the game. Instead of saying, okay, there's other ways to attack in the zone, a zone defense, and that was it.
Do you ever does Coach Boeheim want to do a lot of those motivational ploys? That bulletin board, that 17-point underdog on the.
No, when you come to Syracuse, that's expected.
Uh-huh.
You know, as a player, to get up for big games, that's expected. That's why you come to Syracuse. That's the stage you want to be on. And if you don't expect that, you don't belong at Syracuse. And that's just it.
All right, so let me ask you this. At what point did you guys know Cam Reddish wasn't going to play last night?
He was warming up. You know, going into it, our game plan was that Cam was going to be there. And we prepared for the Duke team entirely. Like, it wasn't like we were saying, okay, this guy's out. You know, we prepared for the Duke team that was coming into that game, the number one team in the country. And just a fortunate, you know, Cam was, you know, he had the flu. And then, you know, the Jones kid went out with a bad injury, which kept him out the rest of the game, which is unfortunate. You know, you never want a kid to get injured regardless of what, you know. At the end of the day, it's just a basketball game, and these kids are kids, you know, so it's unfortunate.
All right, so with that being said, you know, Cam Reddish doesn't play. As you mentioned, Trey Jones goes out with that shoulder injury not even 6 minutes in. How did that change the game? Because he was obviously very disruptive in the first five and a half minutes.
Four steals in 5 minutes, definitely. He's a great player. Obviously, he caused some big time turnovers at the beginning of the game, which, you know, helped him to get out to 11-0 start. And at the end of the day, I think Coach expected that to happen. Probably not the way it happened, but he expected those guys to come out really amped up. And eventually, we will calm down and kind of get into the groove, which happened. And thank God for Tyus Battle. Holy cow.
Yeah, I was about to ask you about that. I mean, he was wearing Batman sneakers, but he was Superman there at one point, right?
Superman. What's another person higher than Superman? Some of the shots he made, some of the plays that he made in that game, you just was like, wow. And you know what? For kids out there, for coaches out there, you know, after the Georgia Tech game, us as a staff, we went back to the Mello Center and we watched the game entirely, and we tried to figure out what we needed to do best to move forward. And when we got out of the game, when we got out of that meeting, it's about 11 o'clock at night, 11:30 at night, and Tyus Battle's in the gym. Then the next morning, we had practice before we left for dorm. Tyus Battle is the first person on the court an hour before practice. So you knew he was ready for that game.
How much did you need Tyus to step up when he did, when you're down 11-0, just in order to, like, calm everybody else down and steady the ship there?
You need Tyus at all times. It don't matter if we're up 20 to do what he did or we're down 11. We want Tyus to be aggressive. When Tyus is scoring, that's when we are at our best, and that's what he's here for. You know, not to say that's all he does, but in order for us to be successful, a guy like Tyus Battle gotta be what he was on Monday night.
So let me ask you this, Griff: is he like the coach's dream? Because he's your leader, he's your best player, he's your Superman, he's your Batman, whatever term you want to use, and he's the guy who's first in the gym and the last to leave, and, you know, the whole lead by example thing. I mean, is it just natural that the younger guys look up to him and they see that, and it almost makes your job as a coach easier to just point to him and say, listen, do what he does?
Oh, definitely. We wish we had 13 Tyus Battles.
That wouldn't be fair. That wouldn't be fair.
Yeah, why not? I mean,
you need a lot more basketball.
I mean, Duke got, you know, Andre, you know, the Barrett kid. They got Zion and the Jones kid who went out, who, you know, when you look at it, all three of those guys can go out and be, you know, 1-2-2-1 and number 10 in the draft this year. So why not us having 13 tied battles?
It's kind of unfair what Duke's doing, too.
Exactly.
There should be a salary cap on recruiting. You can only have two top 10 kids.
Right. Definitely.
Did you think, in all honesty, did you think you guys could win a game like that in Cameron, like a track meet? I mean, that, you know, we saw, what, 3 years ago you went down there and you beat them. And I know you weren't on the staff then, but they beat them by two on the road in Cameron 3 years ago. But it was, the game was in the 60s. It was like 66-64. Right. I mean, that game was in the 90s last night. Did you know that this particular team was capable of winning a track meet like that?
We have that in us. You know, some of our returning guys, they only know one way because – last year, that's how the way we had to play. We had to slow it down. We had to control the tempo of the game just because of the bodies that we have. I mean, if you look at what we've done since we put Merak in the starting lineup, it's been a faster pace, so to speak, for us so that we can get more possessions in the game. And that's what we're trying to accomplish. We want to play that fast, and do I think that we can lose to anybody in the ACC, but at the same time we can beat anybody because we have the talent, we have the experience, and you know we have everything that you can attribute to winning basketball, you know, and we just got to go out there and just be a little bit more consistent than what we are.
You mentioned Merak right there. Is he okay after getting run over by a train?
Hey, listen, Merak just got his first feel of American football.
That's a good way to look at it.
He did. I mean, he got ran over by a tight end.
He lifted him off the ground.
Oh, he did.
Both of his feet were off the ground.
Yeah, we could see the bottom of his sneakers.
But the greatest thing about that was the kid had courage to sit in there and take the charge, which, I mean, if you think about it, probably that was the only charge that we had all game, either team. Right?
Yeah, I don't remember. I'm trying to remember Duke drawing. No, I don't think they did. Duke draws charges all the time.
All the time. That was the only charge of the game, and it was a non-American who took it. So kudos to him.
He might not do it again after that.
Probably not, but that was a big one.
I mean, the comments in the locker room after were everything from someone called 911. O'Shaver said, told me he thought Merak was dead.
It was funny.
He outweighed him by 100 pounds.
Oh, easily. And, you know, if you looked at, you know, the game and hopefully, you know, if we had a camera a shot of the bench when, you know, Merak was out, he went directly to the front of the bench where Brad Pike was, who was our athletic trainer. He didn't sit down in the seat. He went there and said, "Hey, Brad, I'm hurting." So, but at the end of the day, you know, kudos to him because he had the courage to sit in there, and that's what we need to do. We need to make those plays. You know, we can look at the plays that Tyus made all game, the plays Elijah made, and everything, but the little plays make a difference. And, you know, Merak, he does a great job of doing a lot of the little things that help us win.
You know, I noticed after the game, I talked to Merak, and his English was better after that.
He had a concussion.
When a player, especially a role player like Merak, makes a play like that, whether it's a block shot or a dunk or, in this case, a memorable drawn charge, how much does that fire up the team?
Oh, big time. I mean, at the end of the day, I think Coach has made it a big-time priority for us to do the little things. When it came down to it in that game, we had a game plan, and for 90% of that game, we stuck to our game plan, which gave us a chance to win in the basketball game. And that's all we can ask of the kids.
You know, you talk about the game plan. I asked Jerry about this earlier today on the Orange Nation radio show about the game plan defensively. And it seemed like, especially with, you know, a depleted Duke roster, you know, two of their starters are out in this game, you know, Cam Reddish and then Trey Jones goes out with injury. It seemed like you were letting anyone other than O'Connell, if they wanted to take a three, it was okay. Take a three, and you hope that Duke missed shots, and they played right into your hands, you know, 9-for-43 from three-point range. Was that kind of the game plan, especially when Trey Jones was out and you knew Reddish wasn't going to play, and, okay, Zion's hurting us, we got to protect the, you know, the paint, let him shoot some threes and see if they can beat us from behind the arc?
Yeah, but also too, we still wanted to stick to what we do every day, but you know, we wasn't as aggressive as we usually are. We kind of said, okay, when they catch it, we'll move up, as opposed to be there when they catch it. You know, and that was the only difference that we did. And inside, when Zion did catch the ball, we wanted to make sure that he see a bunch of bodies around him, to just making it tough for him to just going up and scoring, which, to be honest with you, he did a phenomenal job of scoring at some points. And some of the shots that he made, you were like, wait, what? You know, they had their own Superman too, you know. He was phenomenal in the game. He's a great talent. And, you know, I'm not looking forward to seeing him the next time we play him here at the Carrier Dome.
Duke still takes 43 three-pointers. That's the most anybody's ever taken against a Syracuse team. It's a record. Wow. So is the strategy still not going in? These guys have to beat us from the perimeter?
Oh, definitely. You know what? And at the end of the day, if they make those threes, I mean, you just got to live with it. When you're there on the catch, which we tried to be there on every catch, and make the shots difficult. And if they're making difficult shots, you know, at the end of the day, like, it's just their time.
Our producer, Tommy, informs me that R.J. Barrett took a charge on Tyus with 6 minutes to go in the second half. So there was one on each side.
I thought I was smarter than everybody else tonight, but God.
There was one.
Yeah.
I remember Alex O'Connell started to take one.
Yeah.
And there was no contact on the play, and he fell down. And I thought, that's supposed to be called now. Although I think the referee, actually, when he looked at it, he didn't know if Alex had flopped or if he had, like, whoever the Syracuse player was, had just, like, broken ankles on him.
Was that at the top of the key?
Yes.
Oh, that's when Frank hit the big three.
That's the one.
Oh, big time for Frank.
Yeah, I don't think there was even any contact.
No contact.
Frank just juked him.
Frank was in his bag, so to speak. That's what they call it, in his bag, you know. Frank was in his bag, so.
315-437-7644 is the number. If you have a question for Alan Griffin, we're going to take our first time out here on the Alan Griffin Show. We're coming to you live from Attilio's on James. We are back after this on ESPN Radio.
Live from Attilio's. This is the Alan Griffin Show. Here's your host, Stephen Fonte.
Stephen Fonte, Mike Waters, Alan Griffin with you up until 9 o'clock. Feel free to give us a call at 315-437-7644. And Griff, I don't know if you know this, but we are in the presence of greatness tonight.
Oh, I read it today. You know what? Everybody want to be like Mike.
So congratulations to Mike Waters, New York State Sports Writer of the Year.
Big time.
And and I just learned during the break, I didn't realize this, first non-New York City sports writer to win the award since 1970. Wow. That is amazing. And in all seriousness, congratulations and well deserved.
Congrats, Mike.
Thanks, Griff. Thanks, Steve. I don't even know what – it's kind of humbling and, you know, I'm not – you know, it makes me a little uncomfortable to talk about myself like that. So, but it was pretty cool. It was cool, and I appreciate it very, very much.
All right, back to basketball now.
Yes,
and I know we had to say something because that's an amazing honor. So congratulations, Mike. And now I know if I want to make you feel uncomfortable, I'll just bring it up. How about one of the guys you work with on a regular basis? We got to get to the play of Pascal Chukwueze. But we talked about Tyus in that opening segment. But that was, I think, hands down, Pascal's best performance in a Syracuse uniform, period. 10 points, 18 rebounds, 3 blocks, 31 minutes, hit a couple of big free throws late, scored your final 4 points for that final 4-point margin on that alley-oop or missed shot or whatever that was from Frank Howard.
Missed shot.
Was it missed shot? Missed shot. I thought it was a missed shot as well.
I think Frank, he confirmed it was a missed shot.
He confirmed. Okay. Yeah, it's confirmed. I thought it was a missed shot as well. just talk about his development, and I know it's been a rough couple of weeks for Pascal, you know, losing his starting job and coming off the bench, and then he doesn't play against Clemson, and then he gives you that. I would imagine being his position coach, you were awfully proud of him.
You know what? Kudos to Pascal because, you know, any kid in that situation would have been down and out. And the thing that Pascal didn't do was not come to work every day. Working with him every day has always been a pleasure to me. He's always been a great kid and always did whatever I asked him to do. And, you know, to see him have that success is very, you know, I'm very happy for him, you know, personally. But, you know, at the end of the day, with that success, there come expectation. And he has to bring it every day. And, you know, come tomorrow in practice, I'm going to expect him to have that same enthusiasm, that same get after the ball. And if he doesn't, you're going to see a bad side of Griff. And I know he's going to see a bad side of Coach. He's definitely going to see a bad side of Griff. So, again, very happy for him. It was awesome to see him do what he did. But you know what? At the end of the day, I'm not surprised. I see it every day. I know he has it in him. He just got to go out there and just have the confidence to going out there and saying, I can do this. And what he did was phenomenal.
One of the big parts of Pascal's contributions last night that stood out to me was, yeah, he had 18 rebounds and he had the 10 points anyway, but the 9 offensive boards. Because while he usually does a pretty good job of turning around and eating space in the back of the zone and getting the defensive rebounds, he's never really been known as an offensive rebounder, and yet last night, 9 offensive rebounds.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the one thing about Pascal's offensive rebounding throughout the year, not just last night, a lot of teams are sending the kitchen sink, so to speak, to the guys that's driving to the basket. You know, Tyus, Frank, you know, Elijah, O'Shea. And what Pascal got to do is make sure he gets himself in great rebounding position. And I thought last night he was very aware of what was going on, and he put himself in position to being successful. And that was the best part of it. And he was engaged from the start. He knew exactly what he had to do, and he executed the game plan, you know, to perfection.
Every game is different. Every matchup is different. Why was this particular matchup, you know, a good one for Pascal opposed to, you know, maybe a better matchup for him opposed to Marek?
Well, you know, Bolden is a big kid, and Bolden played well, and Bolden was out there just along with, you know, a bunch of the other, you know, big guys that they have. And just the way their style of play and how they play and the style of defense that they do, we knew that they have a lot of help. Once we get past the initial part of their defense, we knew that once we get that part, there's going to be guys coming over. And Pascal and Barama and, you know, Marek had to position themselves in better offensive rebounding positions so that when we do get a shot up, we can, you know, rebound and, you know, and have those opportunities.
Wanted to talk to you about Pascal's defense. Mm-hmm. Yes, Zion Williamson did score 35 points, but it seemed like as the game wore on, more and more, Pascal was between Zion and the basket and just putting his arms in the air.
Right.
And at least making Zion shoot over something. Did you guys talk to him at halftime or as the game was going on about how to defend in the middle there?
No, that's part of our defense. When guys get the ball in the middle of the zone, you know, it's almost a one-on-one situation. And what Pascal did last night, he was very active and he wasn't late to the ball. He was on time, or sometimes, you know, he was there before the ball got to the position where Zion was. So it put him in the situation to be successful. And when you got a 7-2 guy in there where you don't have that much space, he can use his length to eat up space, it works out to our favor, you know, 90% of the time.
You know, they say that once is a fluke, twice is a coincidence, three times is a trend. We have now seen arguably your three best offensive performances come on the road: Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Duke. It's a trend. Why is that? I mean, what is it about this particular team and playing on the road that it seems like the offense comes so much easier for you guys when you're on the road?
You know. First of all, we have the best home court advantage in the country. I still believe that. You know, as a former player, I always felt a certain confidence coming into a game at home because the Carrier Dome is our home. It's just what, you know, that's a part of us as a Syracuse University. So, like, when it comes to it, like, at the end of the day, we're always going to play well at home. It just so happened that, you know, we've got some 3 big-time wins on the road. Guys concentrate. But you know what? guys have got that little bit of chip on their shoulder, especially on the road, which we got to create that chip at home because, you know, again, we got to protect that great home court advantage, which is the Carrier Dome, which is the fans, which is, you know, just, you know, the community feel when we go out there every night. But it's no coincidence. I just think that we just been really more focused and honed in when we on the road playing against the teams that we played. And, you know, and at the end of the day, those guys listen, those guys hear, those guys read when people are doubting us. You know, they don't doubt us as much as when we're home because I think a lot of people who write and who talk radio knows how great of an advantage this the Carrier Dome is for us. And so they don't talk that much about when we're home. But when we're on the road, I mean, again, 17-point underdogs, you know, it kind of sparked a little fire in our guys and our coach.
In those games that Steve referenced, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Duke, was there any threat of similarity there in either how you guys attacked those teams or in how they defended you?
Be honest with you, nah.
Okay.
You know, Mike, it was just one of those things where – again, I just think that the concentration level was high, but also too, no one gave us, you know, no credibility in terms of us, you know, being able to hang with these teams on the road, and our guys were up for the challenge, and we just gotta focus the way we focus on the road at home, knowing that we got one of the best home courts in the country.
You look at those venues, too, you know, all really tough places to play. And Ohio State was undefeated at the time when you beat them. Notre Dame, I mean, Tyus had yet to beat Notre Dame in his career. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you go down to Duke. And I threw out that stat last night that Duke was 90-0 all time at home as the number one ranked team against unranked opponents. Wow. You guys are the first team to do it. What is that feeling like to go into someone else's building, namely that building against that team, and you know that there's a number one next to their name? What is that feeling to, you know, to come out of there with a win and to head back home, you know, knowing you knocked off the top ranked team in the country and, you know, the sports world is talking about you?
You know, it's funny. I didn't even hear that stat or even see that stat. You know, I've been a part of another one of them when we went down to UConn. I think they were number one in the country, and we beat UConn.
In 99.
Yeah.
Beat them pretty handily, too, if I remember correctly.
Yep,
yes.
That was a totally different game. That was like 57-42.
Yeah.
That was the halftime score.
Yeah. you know, it's always a great feeling going on the road and winning a, you know, a hard-fought game. Like that, and you know, our guys were up for the challenge. They were focused, and the one thing I would say, they executed the game plan to perfection, offensively and defensively. The one thing that we knew that if Tyus didn't make shots, we didn't have a shot at winning the game. Elijah didn't make shots. So we were able to get those guys opportunities where they needed to get those opportunities in order for us to win the game. And we know, like, if Pascal don't come to play when we play some of the better teams in the country and Frank don't come to play when we play some of the better teams in the country, we don't have a shot. And those guys stepped up in the second half and played great.
And that's why he's the New York State Sports Writer of the Year. He was spot on, 59-42.
Wow.
February 1st, 1999.
Well, does it show my stat line?
No, I just had the score.
Oh,
you had 10 or 12.
You went for 35 in that game?
No, I didn't.
No, I'm kidding.
No. I don't even think I had 10.
You were in double figures.
Was I really? Mike?
Yeah.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
You have the box score, like photographic memory. Mike's like filing back in his mind.
That's why he's the best.
It was the best.
You had you and Atan and Damone Brown.
Oh, yeah. We had a really good team.
Ryan Blackwell
was great.
Liverpool High School coach.
Oh, unbelievable.
I'm going to throw another stat out. As long as we're talking about stats, you guys probably saw this one on SportsCenter last night. You were flying back, so maybe you didn't see it, Griff. Tyus Battle, his 32 last night, the third most points scored by an SU player in a win over a top five team. So Johnny Flynn has the record at 34 when they beat UConn in the six overtime game. Carmelo next on the list with 33. Texas was number five in the country at the time in the 2003 semis. And then Tyus last night, 32. So he's third on that list.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, wow.
Great, that's a good list.
That is a terrific list.
Unbelievable list.
We do need to take a timeout, 315-437-7644. If you're on hold, stay on hold. We'll get to your phone calls next. We're coming to you live from Attilio's on James. Back after this on ESPN Radio.
Live from Attilio's, this is the Alan Griffin Show. Here's your host, Stephen Fonte.
All right, Stephen Fonte, Mike Waters, Alan Griffin with you for another 20 minutes or so on the Alan Griffin Show, coming to you live from Attilio's on James. Got a couple of phone calls lined up for you at 315-437-7644. To the phone lines we go. Pat in Syracuse kicking us off on the show tonight. Hey, Pat.
Hey, so is there a little competition between the shows with Griffin and G-Mac?
No, not really. G-Mac's my guy. I remember when G-Mac stepped foot on campus, we played a little 5-on-5, and before even his freshman year, he kind of got me, so there's no competition there. It's all love.
Just on the golf course, right?
Yeah, a little bit on the golf course, but he's such a great golfer.
That sounds like a political answer, but I'm going to bounce this one off of you guys. Here's the thing I'm looking at, last year's club versus this year's club. The only thing that I'm seeing about last year's club that I thought was a little bit more imposing on opponents is the defensive line in the back of the zone. Obviously, from an offensive standpoint, you know, he's an amazing player, and we're really fortunate to have him. But what I will say is last year when you go back and look at the tape, the back of the zone on the defensive standpoint with Dolezal and Brissett on the wings and a center – now you got a really big lineup back there. I'm just wondering why we don't see that a little bit more and rotate these players, whether you're putting Hughes at the two, Tyus at the one, and I thought maybe we'd see a lineup like that because Duke was one of the bigger teams with the injury and with the other guy being sick. I mean, they were putting a big team out there, and I'm just wondering about that. And the other thing too, the thing about last night is that caught my eye as a fan. And by the way, I've been arguing with Coach Boeheim since Alan Griffin and Jason Hart were fighting for playing time, and Adam Schein was in the studios, and Adam Schein asked Boeheim about it, and he got blasted. So I expect nothing but the same from Coach Boeheim. But I was on Griffin's side. I think it was your junior year, or maybe it was your sophomore year. You got significantly less minutes than Jason, and when you were in there, you were a monster. And I remember it. And I think everybody, it's easy to play Monday morning quarterback. But my whole point is this: what do you guys do to try to keep the rhythm going? And then what's your comment on having those big forwards on the backside of that zone?
Yeah, you know, the one thing about that lineup, we struggled to score, especially last year. And the thing about with Elijah, he gives you another scoring threat, another a guy that could stretch the defense and who can open up the lane for guys like Tyus, for guys like O'Shea to drive in the ball. Defensively, we took a chance, so to speak, or we took a little hit in terms of having that lineup. And at the end of the day, that lineup was great towards the end of the year. We were holding teams, you know, minus 20 in terms of their scoring averages on the year. But, you know, you got to sacrifice something. In college basketball, when you're a really good team, you're scoring in the 70s, 70s and above in order for you to win basketball. You still got to put the ball in the basket. And I think what happened is that why you don't see that lineup more often was because, you know, the centers were struggling. You know, Barama and Pascal were struggling a little bit. To find a rhythm and find some consistency. And, you know, Coach had to do what was best for the team, and that's why you see Merak and you see a little bit more of a smaller lineup out there for majority of the game. And to be honest with you, within the last five games, it actually helped, you know, and it helped our offense. It helped us play a lot more faster. And I think we were like 4-1 in the last five games or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, it's all about winning basketball games.
Yeah, he had won four in a row, then lost to Georgia Tech, and now you're 5-1 in the last six. Back to the phone lines we go. We've got Rich in Clay, who's been holding. Thanks for holding, Rich. How are you tonight?
Well, I'm well. No problem. Coach, how are you?
I'm doing great, Rich.
So before my question, I just want to comment. I mentioned them all one time. It was a little bit after your playing days, but I've been watching SU Hoops for a long time, and you're ranked as one of my favorite players of all time, and the reason is just your defensive tenacity was unmatched, and you just never quit out there. And you talk about Trey Jones. I could not help but think about you back in your playing day, and that guy just alluded to it on a previous call from me, so just thank you. I really enjoyed watching you play. You got after it. There was no doubt about it. You love playing defense, so just appreciated that. So my question, how difficult is it for coach or you or anybody to bark signals, plays with the sidelines in that arena?
In terms of the fans,
communicate with the players on the floor.
In terms of the fans, like how hard is it to communicate with the players on the
floor? Thing that I was really was happy about was Frank. He stepped up, in terms of being the leader, and he had signals to our guys offensively, especially. We had signals so that if coach called the play, Frank would have a hand signal so that the guys would know exactly what play we were in, because they do such a great job of distracting you defensively when you're down there. I mean, it's a loud place. They do a phenomenal job of being as loud as they can. It's a small, intimate place. It's a great college basketball environment. It's one of the best. For being there for two straight years, I would put that place up with any place in the country in terms of the basketball ambiance and the environment that they create there is unbelievable. But our guys did a great job of understanding the game plan. So they didn't have to really look at the bench. They knew exactly what they had to do, especially defensively. And then offensively, when the ball got changed to after halftime to outside, it was easier to kind of see coach and understand exactly what we tried to do on offense. Kudos to our guys for understanding the game plan and executing the game plan to a T.
It does get loud there. I mean, the media sits right there, courtside, right in front of those students.
And you got the students like breathing down your neck.
They're right on top of you. And it gets to the point where you can't hear the person next to you.
Yeah.
You have to like lean in and like yell in an ear.
Is that the loudest place you guys play?
Probably one of the loudest.
Yeah.
I mean,
is it compared to any place else?
No.
Yeah.
I would say the Carrier Dome. When the Carrier Dome is rocking, it's a loud place to play. And it's even for us as a home team, when those fans are up cheering for good play and hard plays that we've created, it's a loud place and it's a place that distracts any team that comes in there.
All right, we've got to take our final time out here on the Alan Griffin Show. We do have time for another quick phone call or two if you'd like to check in at 315-437-7644. Stephen Fonte, Mike Waters, Alan Griffin with you for another 10 minutes or so. We're coming to you live from Attilio's on James. We're back after this on ESPN Radio.
Live from Attilio's, this is the Alan Griffin Show. Here's your host, Stephen Fonte.
Stephen Fonte, Mike Waters, Alan Griffin with you for another few minutes on the Alan Griffin Show, coming to you live from Attilio's on James. This conference is impossible to figure out. I mean, you look at, there are many examples, but Pittsburgh, for instance, last week, knocks off Louisville. Then Louisville goes on the road to Chapel Hill and just blows out the Tar Heels in their own building. Obviously, you guys lose to Georgia Tech at home, turn right around, knock off Duke. Florida State, loses by a buzzer beater, essentially, at home to Duke, and then they go on the road and they get beaten and beaten pretty badly last night at Pittsburgh. It just goes to show you, it's not just coach speak. You really can lose to anybody on any given night in this league.
Oh, definitely. We can beat anybody in this league, and we can lose to anybody in this league. And that's the one thing, and that's the one message that was given to our guys, way before we started even playing games, non-conference, let alone conference games. But it showed Saturday night when we didn't play as well as we could, and we fell to a pretty good Georgia Tech team.
After tonight, only four games into the league schedule, there's only going to be one unbeaten team in the league. Because someone between Virginia and Virginia Tech loses. I mean, the parity in this league, and I don't want to call it parity, sometimes is a bad word. It makes it sound like everyone's not great. Right. They're all, like, equally bad or something, or equally mediocre. But, my God, this league's going to How do you stay afloat?
You know what? You just got to go out there and play. You can't look at the front of the jersey and expect to play. You need to understand that it don't matter what the name on the front of the jersey is. You got to go out there and play. You know, Virginia, when you look at it, in the whole grand scheme of things, has been phenomenal all year. And then, you know, that momentum carried over into league play, and, you know, they up pretty big on Virginia Tech right now at the half. So, Virginia, I would say, is probably playing the best in the league. And everybody else is playing well, and we just got to go out there and just, you know, do your thing and play to the best of your ability, and hopefully, you know, you come out with the W.
Pittsburgh's next Saturday at 2 o'clock, 2-2 in conference play. They obviously, you know, beat Louisville, as I mentioned, in overtime by 3. They took care of Florida State. They had a close loss on the road at NC State. Is this team a little bit better than we thought they'd be coming into the year?
Oh, definitely. You know, the one thing about Pittsburgh is they got guys that they attack. They're an attacking team. They've took on Coach Capel's personality, his pedigree coming from, you know, that Duke family. And he has those guys playing at a high, high level. And you know what? You know, last year there were no easy out for us. And obviously this Saturday is going to be a hard-fought game for us. And we just got to be up for the challenge.
He's got a couple kids that are playing really well for him, freshman Trey McGowan's and Xavier Johnson. You see these guys when out on the recruiting trails?
Oh, yeah, definitely. But I actually seen those guys on film. You know, I'm not doing the scout per se. You know, Coach Autry is doing the scouting. You know, my office is connected to Coach Autry's office, so I hear him going, ooh, ah, yo, Griff, you got to come see this. And I go into his office, and he's showing me 5 clips in a row of what's going on. So, I mean, they got a really good team. So we got to, you know, be ready to play.
All right, we got to run. Trey McGowan's, by the way, 30 points last night for Mike Waters. Alan Griffin, I'm Stephen Fonte. Enjoy the rest of your night, everybody. Thanks for listening.